Hello, and welcome to the Super Secret Tech Podcast. This is episode number 3. We are a weekly podcast devoted to Magic the Gathering news, opinions, and insights with an eternal state of mind. I'm your host, Brooks, joined by my co-hosts, Adam, Topher, and Peter. In today's show, we'll be briefly discussing changes to the Grand Prix Trials, and then we're going to dive into our main segment about bug decks and Legacy, where they come from, why there are so many, and what you can do to stop them. Lastly, we'll be asking you another trivia question. Any correct answers for the trivia question we receive will be entered into a drawing for a free draft set of the most current sets. But before we get into all that, let's talk about our weeks in Magic. Now, Adam, I know that you've had a very fun week in Magic, most notably casting Bonfire of the Dams and denying people their dreams. Tell us about this glorious red-green pile of garbage you're running in Modern.
So it runs some ramp, 4 Utopia Sprawl, 4 Arbor Elf, 2 Birds of Paradise, Blood Moons, Stone Rains, Beast Within, Mondovi, however you say it,
Acid Moss. Monvuli Acid Moss?
Monvuli, yes, that one. And then it ramps into the Red Titan and Storm Breath Dragon and Chandra, pretty much it. Oh, and it's running 4 Bonfire of the Damned.
Is the Bonfire for the Rubbins, or is it actually a meta call?
It's a bad deck versus...
He should be running... If he wants removal, he should be running Sudden Shock. Look, you're never going to use it for burn, and let's be real here. Bonfire of the Dam's not a good Magic card.
Says the guy who plays with Miracles on a regular basis.
Well, there were many times when I hard cast it for, like, 4, because I had access to 7 mana and wiped the whole board. Well... Like, the deck ramps pretty hard. And then when you bonfire for, like, 7 off the top, it's glorious.
I guess that's true. I'm not thinking about your ramp. I was more thinking of, like, turns 1 and 2 and not being able to do anything with it.
No, that happens. But you can still cast it for, like, a couple.
Well, just, I feel like, did you find yourself, like, actively wanting board wipes? It was more like you're trying to just kill singular creatures or...
Against the decks that ran a lot of creatures, I really wanted to kill them all. Because my creatures could not stop you from going wide. Like, Storm Breath Dragon can block something. Inferno Titan's okay.
When you said Chandra, you were talking about 4 mana Chandra, the new one, not the new 6 one. Mana the new Chandra one. That would clean up those go wide problems.
It's kind of funny just how like Chandra Pyromaster was like the best Chandra for a while, and Torch Chain just has basically completely outclassed it.
Well, they gave us Chandra Flamecaller too.
Yeah, but that's a 6 drop, so it's not as, you know, you don't directly.
All the modes are relevant throughout the day.
Any Planeswalker with 4 abilities is pretty good.
There was one I played against Sun and Moon.
Oh, God.
It's red, white, prison with Blood Moons. So I played a turn 2 Blood Moon, and Stone Rained his only planes. And the only things he could play were Planeswalkers. So I played my Chandra, plused it. He played his Chandra, plused his. We spent like 4 or 5 turns plusing Chandra to deal 2 damage to the other person's Chandra. He eventually hard cast a Simeon Spear Guide to put pressure on, and then I top decked Bonfire of the Dams to kill everything. He then drew planes, played an Ahiri, which I bonfired again to kill, because I'm a luck sag. And then I played a Stormbreath Dragon, and he conceded. It was great.
How salty was he by the end?
He was so pissed off because he's a Blood Moon deck, except every planes he played, I destroyed.
You're the better Blood Moon deck. That was like the best part of playing that was playing Blood Moon and still getting their basics was just like, oh, he must be so pissed right now.
Man, like it's pretty great playing lands, being able to ghost quarter them too.
Like I played against 3 different Tron decks and it was hilarious. He was like, oh.
Very nice.
So yeah, turn 2 Blood Moon in Modern is great. The problem, like, it's just so bad at top decking.
Hence the bonfires. Even if it's an empty board on their side, you're still not unhappy to see a Bonfire of the Dam.
Yeah, still is a fireball. Still ended up 5-4, which is respectable. I had to borrow some cards for the deck. I didn't get any reps in within it beforehand that it's a bad deck. But it was fun.
I'm glad you can admit that. Yeah. Were you actually playing Stone Rain? Like classic Stone Rain?
It's accurate.
Anyway, Topher, you 5-0'd some leagues, if I recall correctly?
Yeah, I've been playing a lot of Magic Online, trying to see if I can get the top spot on the competitive Legacy League trophy board. But unfortunately, real life and a vacation to Florida stole the last 6 days from me, so fell a little bit behind. I've been grinding a lot of leagues since I got back to play catch-up.
It's been 6 days. He has 5 5-0s, and you're in second place?
I had 5 before I left. I came back yesterday noontime, and I've gotten two since, but thanks to not having anything else to do. So we'll see. We'll see where I end up.
Awesome. How about you, Peter? What did you do this week? Yeah, you.
Let's see. I played a couple different decks. I played in our Legacy FNM with Reanimator, and did not do too hot with that. That was the Fort Chancellor version, and punted pretty big against Adam and forgot to bring in Pithing Needles for Deathrite Shamans, something I would normally have thought of. And Sunday, I did rather well. I came in second, I think. My only loss was to Soldier Stompy, and I was on lands.
That's a fair loss.
I just feel like whenever we're playing this guy, he's got it really teched out for our specific meta. You lose to, you know, turn one Chalice on one, turn two New Salia, turn three Suppression Field. Like, you lose to that.
Sometimes he'll flash out an Even Mind Sensor when you're least expecting it, or a main deck Containment Priest.
I would be hard-pressed to play a deck in Legacy that doesn't lose to turn one Chalice, turn two New Thalia, turn three Suppression Field. Like, name me one deck that doesn't lose to that.
Storm. Deal with the Chalice. Post board their design.
Plus, like, Merfolk, maybe.
Show and Tell.
Merfolk would probably have the best chance.
Show and Tell.
Well, only the Show and Tell part, not the Sneak Attack part. That's not good.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Suppression Field and Thalia. Let me tell you guys about how my weekend went. I played in a standard GPT over the weekend.
Gross.
And I punted so hard in one of my matches. And I was clear for top eight. I was like, you know, I'm going to play this last round. I punted so hard, I dropped and left. My opponent played a turn two Heart of Kirin. And this is in Japanese. I know what Heart of Kirin did. On turn three, he played a Siege Modification.
What is that?
And attacked.
That's the red one, right?
Yes, Siege Modification is an enchant creature or vehicle for one red. As long as enchanted permanent is a vehicle, it's a creature in addition to its other types, so it's always on. An enchanted creature gets +3/+0 and has first strike. So we played a Siege Modification on it, and then the next turn he played an Aerial Modification on it. 4W enchantment, enchant vehicle or creature. As long as enchanted permanent is a vehicle, it's a creature, just like Siege Modification. And enchanted creature gets +2/+2 and has flying. And because these cards were in Japanese, I didn't like fully comprehend what they were doing. So I swung one of my creatures into his 9/7 first striking Heart of Kirin and just killed it. And he swung back Vigilance and I took the damage. And then I did the same thing again next turn. Like, oh, he doesn't have any creatures. I'm just going to attack and kill him. And he blocked. He blocked. Oh, God, no. What have I done? And I even
had... What round was this?
This was round five. I was just so utterly destroyed.
How did this guy get to round five with a decent record with this horrible deck?
I don't know, but I was so tilted I had to leave. Normally, I don't get that upset, but just something about it. I was so crushed. Like, I know I'm better than this, but apparently I'm not. Let's move on to This Week in Magic, and we have some fun Magic news in the form of there's a Legacy Challenge this weekend on MTGO, and some sad and interesting Magic news in the return of Nationals and changes to the Grand Prix. This article just came out this morning for me. I know you guys have had all day to look at it. What are your thoughts on the return of Nationals and how they're modifying Grand Prix and Grand Prix trials going forward?
Well, Nationals is sweet, just like I watch the Olympics every 4 years. As a Magic nerd, I'll probably watch some Nationals. I don't play a lot of Standard, so I won't be too invested in it. But the real blow is losing the GPTs pretty much mean that you'll only get buys if you grind Planeswalker Punch. Can be tough. Topher and I are doing it now, and we play a lot of Magic.
I'm a little concerned about the loss of GPTs. Like, they did help my local stores, and it makes more sense for my area of the world because of the amount of Grand Prix in our area is diminished compared to the United States. However, as someone who plays Legacy and Modern and less Standard, I still play Standard, but not as much locally. I play online. I'm a little upset because now I'm not going to be able to get buys at these Grand Prix locally, where I used to be able to just show up and win a GPT. Now I have to earn the Planeswalker points by grinding and going to the stores and playing every week, which I understand is what they want to do, but it definitely hurts players in more isolated regions like myself.
Yeah, I remember, Columbus. We had a GPT at our local store, and the top eight was me, Topher, who had wanted a GPT down in Massachusetts, and six people who weren't going to Columbus. So everybody conceded to me so I could get first place two buys. But that sort of thing, you know, rewards us for going to our local game store. And now, you know, I did well there, and the buy certainly helped. So it was kind of just rewarding me for being willing to play at my local store and go down to Columbus.
Yeah, I mean, us the players are still putting money in the local store's pockets for their Grand Prix trials. I'm just upset because it hurts people who aren't able to get out and play as much or only go to these big events more than others, but may still have the skill.
I just feel like it's kind of like a cash grab for Wizards. I feel like in them having these GPTs only on site at the Grand Prix, they're taking money away from these local game stores, and it's just going all straight to their pocket. And I don't think that's really right or fair that, you know, you're taking away from, you know, these local communities, these people, you know, like sometimes the GPT, that's the big thing that's around for the weekend. And now you can only either A, grind for buys like Topher and Adam, or show up like myself and try to just get a spike one of those GPTs. But the problem there is one loss and you're out. And it's not cheap to keep trying them all day.
I think it's unlikely it's a cash grab because Wizards, it's the TO that's going to be seeing the money from the trial grinders, not Wizards. But I do think that it's likely that this is an attempt on Wizards' part to get people to play more PPTQ-style events. Whether or not that is the plan, I don't think it's going to work. I think most people who are dedicated to getting their buys were already grinding these events. The people who are just going to their GPTs to get the two buys to the random GP that they decide they're going to go to, I'm not certain this is going to really motivate them to play more events. The day two Grand Prix PTQs, old style PTQs, is I think pretty interesting. It's certainly, it's like another rebound event. You know, you scrub out day one and you have a PTQ to play in, and it's a big enough event that people might go to the Grand Prix just for that and not the main event.
Do you think the cap size of 225 is?
The cap size is 255, which is weird. That's the 8-round cap. Which actually, now that I'm saying that out loud, makes sense because this is a one-day event, so they don't want to be stuck having to run 12 rounds of Swiss. So maybe it isn't that weird. But I imagine it'll be hitting cap pretty quickly. So if your plan is to go to the Grand Prix for the day two PTQ, better hope there's a pre-register option.
Do you think TOs will give preference to people that played in the GP and dropped for pre-registration? When would you be able to pre-register? You know, what if you don't know if you're going to make day two or not, and you just pre-register and then cancel?
Yeah, I think
it seems difficult.
They'll just, if they do have pre-registering, which I don't see any reason for them not to, they'll be first come, first serve, I imagine. There's certainly been times where I've had to, like, you know, scrape in day two, X and three, or whatever. It's like, probably not going to top eight. Do I want to drop for the day two legacy event? And I don't know, this is just part of playing Magic, you know? You're going to have to make your choices.
We get that a lot here in Japan where people will drop out to play in the day two event, but you have to pre-register the day in advance. They don't let you do same day registration.
Mm.
It just makes me worried about capping on the event size. And
yeah, it's unavoidable, unfortunately. It's just part of reality us Magic players will have to deal with.
I remember back in the day when they were running the old PTQ system just normally, and living in the Northeast, we would go to 300-400 person PTQs on the weekends, and it would be an absolute slog. It'd be miserable. But it was just how things were. And I think that's maybe how things are going to have to be going forward. We just kind of have to accept it for what it is and make the best of it. Wizards is doing what they think is best.
Yeah, I mean, you can't expect the TO to shoulder the cost of keeping the venue open that much longer than the natural end of the day. Better to have an 8-round PTQ than not have it at all.
Yeah, I suppose that's definitely a way to look at it. It's a gift we've been given.
That's right.
I feel like Wizards in their eternal benevolence has been kind of, it's a little wishy-washy for me. I always feel like every time they give us something, they give us a gift, they always take something away at the same time. And I don't feel like we're getting any anything positive necessarily. It's just
done some sort of research that leads them to believe removing GPTs is a good decision. And I mean, you know, if we want to convince them that it's not a good decision, we'll have to make ourselves heard.
Yeah, make sure you email them, message support, give them a call, let them know how you feel. That is a real thing. I remember when they cut the legacy GPs back last year, I wrote a very formal letter and sent it into them. You know, obviously nothing is going to change there, but
yeah.
I can still feel very good about it.
You did what you could.
I did what I could. And then there's the legacy challenge this week. Are you, either of you guys playing the legacy challenge? And if so, what are you playing?
There is a chance that I do. There's a PPTQ about an hour 20 minutes away or so that I might go to for the Planeswalker points, or if I want to sleep late, stay in my pajamas, play the Legacy Challenge. I would play Bug Elves. I've been playing a version of Elves with main deck Decays, Leovold, and Edric. Just a little grindier, a little less combo-oriented. I'd probably bring that for a whirl.
Sounds fun.
How about you, Brooks? You thinking playing in it?
I'm not really sure because I got to wake up at 3:30 in the morning if I want to make the legacy challenge here. Oof.
Yeah.
So I'm strongly considering it because it's Saturday night and then I have to wake up at 3:30 Sunday morning to play. But if I do, I'll just play lands because that's the deck I play in legacy. Still a little undecided about the sideboard choices. We have 3 flex slots that we are always arguing about in our lands group. Yeah. That's really the hardest part for me at this point. Not even the waking up early, because I'm an old man. I have to wake up at 4 a.m. to use the restroom anyways.
So. Might as well wake up and play.
Might as well wake up and play
7
some
rounds
magic.
Of magic, yeah.
Yeah, I can brew some coffee. It's fine.
I won't be. If I was, I'd be playing Miracles, the list I've...
We'll just have them check your latest 5-0.
Yeah, I'm currently playing a list with only 3 counterbalances. Leaving that as an aside, that's the list I would play if I was. Unlike Adam, I take magic very seriously, so I will be getting up to go to the PPTQ. I value the GP Vegas buys more than winning whatever the hell the prizes are from this challenge.
I mean, isn't game day this weekend too?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. If only game days had those sweet Planeswalker point multipliers, I'd go kick ass there too and win the playmat.
Hey man, just the fact that you said you're not going to be participating in the Legacy Challenge makes me want to wake up at the ass crack of dawn and do it that much more.
I think I've like missed like the last 5 challenges or something. It's like there's always some random thing that's going on, or like I think the December one, I signed up the night before, woke up in time while waiting for it to start on my other computer, started watching a video. The computer that has Moto on it, the screen went to sleep, and I completely forgot about it until I had timed out round 1. So that left me pretty pissed off. And,
that sounds like every time I go to make a cup of tea. Like, I'll boil the water, put a tea bag in the cup.
Prior to that, I hadn't signed up for one since, like, the summer. So, yeah, it's been, like, more than a half a year that I've played one of these challenges.
You're just letting everybody else win.
Oh, the worst part was I got a freaking message from Anurag saying, like, oh, I saw you in the freaking challenge. And he screen capped my 0-1 drop. And I'm like, yeah. You're just rubbing this in, aren't you?
That's $25 you're never going to get back.
Yeah, I know. Wizards can have it.
Take your filthy blood money, Wizards. It's all your fault for not... And that's the funniest part, too, is you look at the prizes for, like, the Legacy Challenge, Vintage Challenge, and it's like, hey, first place gets a Rishan import from Mercadian Masks. We're giving you this expensive card because we refuse to reprint it again.
Yeah, I think sure it's
that's
quite
how we pay you.
Opening the damn chest.
It is different, though. The chest one is different.
It still taps down land, right?
Yeah,
still
it does.
Colorless.
It still has
colorless. Shot import.
It does. It doesn't have that.
So it is effectively the same.
Peter, you would probably be the first person to tell me that the masks art is so superior that it really isn't.
I know. I know.
Yeah, exactly. Shut your dirty beard mouth.
Hold on. If we're going to talk about art here, let's throw some shade on Topher with his just tilting deck. He has 4 different swords to plowshare art.
That's the best part. It's 3 different art.
He just...
If it was 4, there'd be rhyme to it. There'd be a reason for it, but no, I picked 3.
I like to imagine Topher's the guy who actually also whiteboarded his entire Miracle set. Like, he just sat around.
I remember the first time I saw someone with whiteboard adjacent, I was like, what did you do?
I was playing in an open, and I was playing against a guy who had fully whiteboarded out his Miracles deck, including his Guru lands.
Of course.
Yeah.
Go bigger, go home.
Travesty. Hopefully, I think you played against him when we were down in New Jersey.
I did play against someone in New Jersey who had a really odd alter to his Miracles deck, but it wasn't whiteboarding. He'd basically drawn gold squiggles around the borders of each card. That's what stood out. I also remember like Sam Raucus having like his deck triple sleeved. I remember cutting it and I was like, what the hell is this?
It takes two people to shuffle the triple sleeve deck.
This weekend while I was turn two stone raining people, I did use all whiteboarded basics. I like to do a little bit of trolling while I'm trolling.
Yeah. Trolls got to troll.
So you can troll while you troll.
Yeah,
it's trollception.
We'll be right back with our main segment.
If you haven't noticed, you've logged onto Magic Online, and nowadays you're very likely to see some decks leading off with Deathrite Shaman and Brub Decay, still casting Brainstorm. I think a lot of that has to do with Reduke won the last GP in Louisville with True Name Bug, and that's slowly been taking over online. I'd say probably the last 20 or so matches I've played online have been against, probably 6 or 7 of them have been against Bug, and as a result, probably 5 or 6 of the other matches have been against Miracles with No Mentor and Entreat the Angels.
Man, it's exactly what we were talking about last week. The format's kind of evolving to deal with this permeating mass of Bug getting into Legacy. And the cool thing about Bug, too, is it makes up a bunch of different archetypes. You know, we have had all these cards recently that have really pushed the power level of Bug, and it's really diverged into a bunch of these different decks. I mean, just looking at the reference sheet we have here, we've got Bug Delver, Shardless Bug, Bug Alluring, True Name Bug, Food Chain Bug, Aether Vial Bug, Nickfit Bug.
Some bugs dead still. There are a lot of different flavors all running Deathrite Shaman. That's probably the biggest consistent in the deck is they all have 4 Deathrite Shamans.
Actually, it goes back to the history of Bug and Legacy. And I think in order to understand Bug and Legacy, we should go over the history of how it's kind of evolved. Now, I'm going to start just right before Return to Ravnica. We had a couple different Bug Landstill decks, just mad props to Pernicious Deed holding down the board back then. And then Return to Ravnica was printed. With the printing of Return to Ravnica, we got 2 incredible tools in the form of Deathrite Shaman and Abrupt Decay. Abrupt Decay was very quickly adopted, as it was tailor-made for combating Miracles, and Deathrite Shaman was only slightly slower, but definitely more of a shower. From here, people started innovating new decks. You know, we saw Deathrite Shaman and Abrupt Decay get shoved everywhere. We saw 4 color lists. We saw it in Delver. We saw it in Midrange. We saw it in Deathblade. We saw it in Mentor decks. We saw it everywhere.
We see Storm and Reanimator splashing green for Abrupt Decay specifically, because it's an uncounterable way to deal with pretty much any permanent-based hate that is going to mess up your graveyard or storming ability.
Yeah, precisely. And over the course of that year, we saw it diverge into 3 unique decks. Bug Aggro, which some of the Legacy aficionados will know as Team America back in the day. Shardless Bug, innovated by Jerry Thompson, of course. And just various other 4-color decks. And then once Deathrite Shaman was fully adopted into pretty much everything, and is now in all creature decks for the most part, we can skip ahead to about 6 months ago. And that's where Miracles was dominating the meta and consistently performing, and people were looking for a way to beat back the menace that is Miracles, and Abrupt Decay got more and more popular. And then we have Conspiracy 2 hits, and the momentum behind Bug just combined with Leovold once people figured out how good he was, and here we are at this point. I mean, Fatal Push even helped that momentum even further in solidifying Bug's position in the metagame as a deck that is very adaptable and now has answers to threats at all mana costs. I think flexibility and robustness define bug now, where before it was just so narrow and in a box that it was only good in certain situations. What do you guys think about that?
Fatal Pushes puts it in an interesting position because it takes a lot of the strain off of your abrupt decays in some matchups. Your abrupt decays can be pretty tight. You don't want to just fire them off willy-nilly and killing pretty much all the same creatures with Fatal Push for one mana less means that you can sandbag, you know, your abrupt decay for the things you can't Fatal Push.
Further on, Fatal Push gives you better curves early on. You have a turn one kill now, so you can curve removal into Goyf or whatever your turn two threat is instead of having to choose whether to abrupt decay or Goyf. But I'd argue that Leovold is a much more significant reason than Fatal Push for Bug's prevalence right now.
It's not the most played card in the format, dead in its tracks. Brainstorm.
That's true. I mean, as the Miracles player here, I will say that Leovold is the new boogeyman. The main reason is that typically your best way, most consistent way of beating Bug decks is Chase. And obviously, Leovold stops baseball, makes Chase bad. You have to basically spend your first turn unsummoning the Leovold. They're going to get a card, they're going to recast it most likely. But once they recast, you've got four mana open in the Jace, so maybe you've got a Swords that can remove it. But it just, if there was anything else than your Brainstorming, it changes the game. And Leovold is so good that it gives you a lot more reward for playing Bug itself. So now you're seeing all of these ridiculous brews, and you could argue that they're all like just the same generic Bug mid-range archetype. And maybe that's true, but they all are playing Leovold. They're almost all playing True Nemesis now. The main thing you're basically seeing is that for all the flex spot differences in all these decks, they're all running 45 of the same cards. And I do think that is because Leovold is so good.
I would tend to agree with that.
Now, I have noticed online that I've been seeing a lot less Shardless because I think specifically in the Bug Mirror matches, the draw three cards of Ancestral Vision can get shut off very easily by your opponent playing an on-curve Leovold, which definitely seems like it is the mirror breaker in that situation.
And it's not very hard to protect your Leovold either.
On the subject of Goyf seeing less play, I think that's mainly the result of there are less opportunities in Legacy right now to essentially just beat down your opponent. A lot of decks do have the removal to deal with the Goyf. Many are running Baleful Strix. That's become the latest popular grindy creature I've noticed personally. Many decks, you know, obviously combo decks not care about the Goyf.
Combo decks don't combo.
You know, like the old Delver decks, Maverick, there are just less creature decks that are open to being outmuscled by the Goyf. Whereas, you know, I would say that would be one of the main reasons why Reduke was so successful with his True Names was the format was so grindy. There's just so many opportunities for the Goyf to get stalled out. And as for what Adam was talking about Shardless seeing less play, Goyf is basically the best creature in. It's doing the muscle work in Shardless. And if Goyf isn't good, then Shardless is going to suffer. But also, speaking kind of the same issue that Goyf was having, when your deck gets all its advantage from essentially abusing Shardless Agent, if Shardless Agent isn't good, then you are essentially just casting more expensive spells. And I don't think Shardless Agent's that good right now, especially in the post-Louisville meta. There are way too many situations where Shardless cannot trade with an opposing creature.
I think that's a really good point, comparing it to Leovold as well, Shardless to the presence of Leovold, because all the cards that we've been seeing play in Shardless, the Visions, the trend towards Baleful Strixes, you know, more Ponders, are directly disrupted by Leovold himself, and it makes it so you can't get value out of the Shardless Agents as easily, or the Visions, or the Strixes. It can torch your plays in ways that are very detrimental to Shardless Bug's modus operandi.
Yeah, the meta seems to be in a situation where your creatures need to either have evasion or be protected from removal. And you're seeing some bug, I don't really know what to call them, bug decks seem to be. They share so many cards but have distinct strategies. People have been calling it bug thresh. Some of them are running the Mongoose. Some of them are running the Delve creatures. Essentially just a different way of abusing your graveyard or taking advantage of it.
Yeah, and the graveyard hate right now is very soft too.
Yeah, you know, like
Surgicals, not rest in pieces. for example.
Yeah, rest in peace could see a comeback, though it's worth noting that what are the white decks in the format to run it? Death and Taxes, Miracles. Personally, I think Snapcaster is definitely, you know, top three card in Miracles, you know, after like Brainstorm and Top. Obviously, Death and Taxes has been running Rest in Peace forever.
Death and Taxes had a recent trend towards Surgicals and Fairy Macabres too, and it's been shaving the Rest in Pieces. So they could.
Yeah, there isn't just.
Yeah, because they can recruiter up Fairy Macabre.
Yeah, and so, I mean, I guess my point is that, like, even if the meta goes full tilt into these Delve bug decks that are trying to use Angler and the Flying Angler's name I can't remember right now, and Nibble Mongoose. Tombstalker, there you go. There's not like a whole lot of opportunity for Rest in Peace to actually be seeing play. Having said that, that's not going to happen.
Not only that, Rest in Peace is still kind of actively not great against the Reduke list either. It only hoses Deathrite Shaman and the one Tarmogoyf.
Yep, that's true.
And the rest of the cards don't care about it at all. You can brainstorm those away.
The decks where you most desperately need graveyard hate, Rest in Peace can be too slow. When I used to run it, I can't count the number of times where, you know, it's against a dredge, turn two Rest in Peace, there we go. And of course, they've got like the, it's not even necessarily like a turn one win, but they've got the turn one Cabal Therapy, you know, or Reanimator. They, you know, Daze is a problem when you can't play your hate card until turn three. That's not good. So this is not to say Rest in Peace isn't a good card, but in the meta, in the situations you want it, I just don't see it being a problem for these bug decks or for any other deck.
I would tend to agree with that.
With the uptick in bug, there has still been bug Delver list showing up with the 4x dazes that make Leovold rough to cast. They still split into the Hymns or Stifles, depending on where you want to be, heavier on the mana denial, or just the ability to snag free wins with Hymns. And they haven't changed too much since recently. The cards are just picking out more and more powerful bug cards to make the list stronger. I know I've lost to both Stifle and Hymn Bug online in the past few weeks. It's been very prevalent, I think. These are Malamujo had like something like 25 or so trophies last league.
That was ridiculous. But yeah, Bug Delver is one of the few bug decks that can't really take advantage of Leovold. It's just a little too slow, you know? Having said that, Liliana of the Veil, Bug Delver deck, probably could play Leovold in the side because it is often finding itself sideboarding into a mid-range deck. Bug Delver is probably one of the last few decks that can, you know, legitimately run the four Goyfs because it really does need the clock, but you know, I've seen lists trying to run more Tombstalkers. You know, they need the evasive threat. I've seen lists running True Names. You know, it doesn't need any explanation there. And I would say that out of all the bug decks, other than Shardless, Bug Delver would be the one I've been seeing the least amount recently, which is surprising because I do think it's a very good deck. But, you know, another casualty of the current meta. There's just a little bit too much removal, a little too many bad matchups in terms of creature combat.
Well, anytime you look at Delver decks, you have to include Grixis and Four Color and Rug as well. And you have to make the decision of which one of those you're going to play. For some people, it's about what duels they happen to own. For some people, it's a metagame call. For some people, it's just what is the flavor of the week. But they all have their advantages. And I think with Delver, you will always have that schism of people that play one version over another because that's just what they're most used to. I think it's going to take a little bit longer for Bug Delver to really come into its own, just how it took Grixis Delver a long time to coalesce around the same list. And I think that that sort of homogenization is going to be what's happening over the next 6 months in Legacy with Bug decks.
You're probably right. Despite how good and flexible the Bug shell is, fact matters, there's so many different types of Bug decks being played. You've got to assume that some of them are strictly inferior to others. Drawing comparisons to Delver and what Delver decks you see in play, I'd say, you know, Fatal Push is a big reason why you might be seeing a downtick of Grixis. Not so much saying that Grixis has gotten worse because of it, but the huge upside of Grixis in comparison to Bug Delver is that Lightning Bolt was turn one removal. One of the most important things to do when your opponent plays a turn one Deathrite Shaman is to kill the Deathrite Shaman. And if you can't kill till turn two, frankly, it's probably done its work by now. Fatal Push does give you the option if you think you're going to be in a bug-heavy meta to be able to play a Bug Delver deck that can kill the turn white Deathrite Shaman on the draw. Whether that's what's going to happen, I obviously can't say. But when I was playing Grixis Delver, I often find myself getting outmuscled by the Bug decks and my Lightning Bolts weren't doing enough. When I was playing Bug Delver, the biggest upside for playing Bug Delver was being able to side into a legitimate mid-range deck. And this is a format where you need to be able to play a mid-range. If you are not playing an archetype that is good against mid-range, you need to actually play mid-range. It felt like I was siding into mid-range more often than I was still playing Delver.
To that end, do you think that we'll see an uptick in Liliana changeover? Like switching from Liliana of the Veil to Liliana of the Last Hope? That card seems much better at grinding out games than Lily the Veil does.
While there are certain matchups that Liliana of the Last Hope would definitely be better, Liliana of the Veil is just consistent. It's got game against combo, it's got game against miracles, it's got game against the other mid-range decks. The only time Liliana of the Veil is bad is when you're basically you have to suicide it as a 3-mana edict. Whether this is the type of meta where that's going to be happening often, I don't think so. I think certainly against bug decks, I mean, sure, your opponent might go turn one, Deathrite Shaman, turn two, 3-mana threat. But as the opposing bug deck, it's going to be a straightforward game plan of, you know, turn two, Abrupt Decay, whatever that turn one mana dork or threat was, and curving into Lily to edict the second card. So I don't think Lily of the Veil is not good right now.
I suppose, and that's the nice thing about Lily of the Veil as well, is that Lily of the Veil provides you a very clean answer to all these true name nemesis.
Yeah.
Where we don't have a whole lot of those right now, a whole lot of answers, I mean.
If Grixis Delver was a lot more popular, then I could see the argument, because Lily of the Last Hope is obviously a much better answer to Pyromancer. But half the time when I'm playing against Grixis Delver now online, I'm not certain I'm playing against Grixis Delver because I don't see Pyromancer. Honestly, it's probably 4-color Delver and I haven't realized it yet.
I know from an Elves player perspective, if I'm playing against a black-green X deck, the best play they can make is a turn one, is a Deathrite, or something like that, into a turn two Liliana, kill my turn one mana acceleration, and then make me discard three cards while I try to deal with it. So I'm personally fine without seeing Liliana, and Liliana of the Last Hope does not kill Deathrite Shaman, which if you're playing it turn two, you really want to be able to do.
I mean, as we all know, Deathrite can just take over a game by itself. It's not a threat that we have to, that we can ignore. You know, we can't hit it lightly. It still has to go.
Deathrite Shaman turns on the rest of the deck. Certainly gotten free wins by killing the turn one Deathrite, and they just completely fizzle out. I've lost games today because I couldn't answer the Deathrite Shaman, so there you go. And I think the other bug deck we wanted to talk about was Alurn, or at least I wanted to talk about it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess, I mean, might as well lump in good old Food Chain, even though it's a bad deck.
The combo bug decks.
Yes, the combo bug. The ones that, they still run, you know, Deathrite Shaman, Brainstorm, they'll run their Ponders, but that's when you start seeing the weird shit. The Glint Nest Cranes, the draft. I mean,
don't knock Glint Nest Crane. That card.
Manipulate Fate.
Oh, yeah.
Hoo-hoo.
Hey, man, Glintness Crane is a very big innovation for Bug Alurn. So for those who don't know, Alurn is an enchantment for 2 green-green. It says any player may play creature spells with converted mana cost 3 or less without paying their mana costs and as though they had flash. So the way the Bug Alurn deck hopes to work is it will find a Cavern Harpy, which lets you bounce one of your creatures back to your own hand, and a Parasitic Strix and just bounce them back and forth forever. Parasitic Strix is an artifact. The deck also plays 4 Shardless Agents, artifacts, and 4 Baleful Strixes, artifacts. And when you add Glintness Crane, it helps you find your combo pieces a lot easier. Not only that, when you're bouncing and casting Shardless Agent over and over again with Cascades, it actually hits the Glintness Crane, which can help you dig for that Strix, because your Shardless Agent can't help you hit the Strix, but the Crane can.
I actually did build Bug Alurn online like 2 weeks ago, so I played a couple leagues with it. And while they've been pretty mediocre performances, I can definitely have been convinced about how good Glintness, whatever the Crane is in that deck, because it does allow you to combo off without a without Recruiter, if you do not yet have the Parasitic Strix, you have to basically find it with Baleful Strix, which is very difficult because you're drawing one card at a time. You've got so much life to work with the Cavern Harpy. With the Glintnest Crane, I mean, that's four cards, so realistically, you maybe have at most like 50... At most, you probably have 48 cards left in your library, so that means 12 life to cycle through your library to find one of your two Parasitic Strixes, so it's much more... possible.
And that's also assuming you don't find Shardless Agents and just use those to cascade for value.
There's a lot. The reason it's nice you'll not have to play the Recruiter is you just got such a much better, fair, non-alluring game plan.
It's almost impossible to brick with the types of redundancy they have.
And it's also very good for the archetype in particular because as someone who's dabbled in a little bit of paper alluring, Recruiters are very expensive and it makes you... You don't see a lot of innovations with the deck because you need to run this card that's, you know, $150 for the cheapest version of it, and it's only good in this deck.
Now, people have been running the Recruiter of the Guard version, and instead of Dreamstalker in the original loop, they changed it to Arctic Merfolk, which does effectively the same job.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how it worked out because Recruiter of the Guard and Leovold got printed both in Conspiracy, and... When everyone saw Recruiter of the Guard, the first thought was, oh, wow, we got a white Alluren deck. We can play Alluren. And Alluren did start seeing a lot more play, but it wasn't because of Recruiter, it's because of Leovold. Because the problem with the Bug Alluren list is you don't actually have good beaters. You've got a lot of value. And if your opponent is playing aggressive game plan, you've got a lot of Strixes to block some creatures with. But if they get through the Strixes, you don't see them, or they're just playing enough beaters, you find yourself throwing away a lot of 1/2s and 1/3s and 2/2s and whatnot. But Leovold gives some real power behind the deck. Gives it an actual, obviously a faster clock with three power and just a better standalone creature.
The funniest thing to me about Leovold is people playing Leovold is the exact reason why Glintnest Crane is good. Because it doesn't draw the card, it puts it into your hand. So you can still combo off through a Leovold thanks to Glintnest Crane.
Yeah, Leovold is the common thread between all these decks. Why they've all of a sudden become good. I mean, a big part of Reduke's list is that there were enough 3-mana threats that it was worth playing Noble Hierarchs as ramp. So it could have the consistent, if you want to call it consistent, turn one Dork into turn three Haymaker through True Name or Leovold.
Yeah, which is only possible if you have just a higher density of the 3-mana threats because those cards, Death Rites and Nobles, they're not what you want to be doing on turn 7 when you're top decking. You don't want to see it.
Yeah, that'd also be why, I mean, I did not talk to Reduke about this, but I can only imagine it's the reason why he was running, I think, 2 of Days. Because, you know, he is planning on very consistently tapping out turn 2. So it added to the power curve of his deck.
Very
synergizing for maximum turn 2 explosiveness.
The most fascinating bit to me is the implementation of the 1x Green Sun Zenith in Reduke's.
We were talking briefly, I think before you started recording, about all the random one of spice bug decks we've played against, and one that I played against. He was running Green Suns, he was running Edrix by Master of Trest, along with the Leovolds and the Death Rites and the Dryad Arbor and whatnot. So he was taking Reduke strategy and running away with it because he had even more 3 drops to ramp into and more turn 1 mana accelerants through the Green Sun for Dryad Arbor. Speaking as a Miracles player, Power Blast has always been a staple in Miracles, but because of Leovold and True Name and the bug decks being more blue heavy now than they used to be, there's a lot more reason to be running 4 Pyroblasts. I'm always bringing them in against Bug, and against that, it was real pain because it'd be like, oh, he's green sunning for the Leovold. Oh, I can't red blast this. This is gonna suck.
I mean, at least you can still kill it.
That's something I'm realizing is just I have to just deal with it and kill the Leovold and let them have their card.
The Leovold
to eventually fail to find a Terminus and still have to kill it and still give them the card like 3 turns later after I've taken 9 damage and not been cantripping.
Take your filthy attacks, Leovold.
Yeah.
In the Bug Elves list that I have been running recently, it's, you know, a mid-rangier. It's sort of like the older White Splash Chaos Elves version that cut natural order. Now, the list I'm playing runs 2 natural order, but what it really wants is just 6 Green Sun Zeniths because you can fetch up an Edric if your opponent doesn't have any creatures and you get to draw like 4 cards. Leovold against decks that are cantripping or targeting your shit. The Green Sun seems really well positioned now. And with these bug decks not running Shardless Agent, it seems like I would not be surprised if we start seeing more green sun zeniths, because you're not hitting a green sun zenith off your Shardless Agent and having to get a Dryad Arbor. You'll always, whenever you see it, you'll always get something good out of it.
You heard it here first, folks. Green sun zenith is going to spike next. Be prepared.
Yeah, if True Name was green. But I think it's thanks to True Name that hasn't happened yet, because while personally...
True Name has gone up in price. True Name's a $30 card now.
That doesn't change the fact that it isn't green. I was saying, thanks to True Name, we're probably not going to see the Green Sun decks take over, because even though as a Miracles player, I fear Leovold more than True Name, I think that most decks, especially in this bug meta, fear the True Name more, as probably evidenced by them being four ofs or the Leovolds are two ofs.
So here's my question to you about True Name. So True Name is definitely the best way to counter the mirror. You can get through, push through damage. Do you think that this will lead to any sort of resurgence in like four color Deathblade? Because equipment, the True Name was the Mirror Breaker, but is now equipment on the True Name, the Mirror Breaker to the mirror?
That could definitely happen. I think I have not played Deathblade in a long time, but it's like basically the greediest deck in the format. Four colors, I'm trying to play them all reasonably aggressively. And basically, it's like, what do you get for playing Deathblade over the True Name bug list? You get Stoneforges, you get the equipment. That's, I mean, obviously that's what we're talking about, but Wasteland is also seeing a lot of play. I mean, do you need to expose your mana that much more? I think that's the reason you probably haven't seen Deathblade yet and might not.
I mean, you're saying
I can't say we won't shit. Because it's certainly possible that if the format gets grindy and then gets slow enough, that Deathblade could get away with more basics and dodge the Wastelands. But I think for most people, they get enough power without the Stoneforges that they feel like they don't need it. If they really do find themselves wanting to mirror break, I'm not certain. I mean, they might not even waste time with the Stoneforges, just slap three Jits in their sideboard or something.
Just four copies of Jit, and it's just like Kamigawa standard all over again.
Yeah. Earlier, I was talking about how the format had gotten so grindy that Goyf was kind of was falling out of favor because of how hard it was to swing through. And the creature combat is backed so much more by removal now instead of just having the bigger creature. So I'm thinking that something I do think we might see happen is more of these bug lists start dabbling in Edric, because there are going to be enough situations where you're going to have the Noble Hark that can go wide, or the Baleful Strix that can fly over. Opportunities for Edric to get value. Yes, Edric is weaker to removal, but I do think there's enough upside in Edric. One of those situations where if it isn't answered the turn it comes down, that you're going to run away with the game.
That's true. I mean, it lets you find your key cards more readily. You know, I mean, we're already running Brainstorms and a couple Ponds.
It's just like, you know, there are enough evasive creatures.
The thing that makes me think that Edric will not be as popular as all that is just the prevalence of Leovold as well, because he does not play well with an opposing
player. That's true. That's something I didn't think of.
Something that I've noticed that I would imagine that you guys haven't noticed was, if you take a look at Reed Duke's list, since the GP has been evolving online, and the first thing that I noticed looking at Reed Duke's list was he wasn't running cards that I almost always see out of bug as an Elves player, such as Golgari Charm, which is not good when you're swinging with your True Names and you have your Noble Hierarchs. I have been seeing an uptick in builds that are either able to work around that, or stuff like Marsh Casualties, more fringe cards that are looking at some of the weaknesses that that deck did have at the GP. I know in one of his post-GP articles, Reed Duke did mention that it did not have a great Elves matchup.
Marsh Casualties does seem like a really good solution to the burgeoning bug meta. Or like the mirrors, at least.
I do think that Marsh Casualties is something that might happen, but the biggest thing I took away from Reed Duke's list was how light on black it was. I mean, combination of True Name plus Noble. His mana couldn't really support him to Torok. Not that I mean, I don't know if he really had room in his deck for it, but like, you know, him to Torok is one of the traditionally best bug cards, and it's seeing a lot less play. The places I'm seeing him out of now recently have been Food Chain, of all places.
Really?
But like, I don't have to worry about it coming from the True Name bug, or, you know, Deathblade. And that is a big sigh of relief for me personally. Maybe if the deck like kind of migrates away from Noble, becomes a bit more grindy, a bit less, you know, explosive, then it could start to support more black cards.
Well, after the GP, I saw quite a few four-color lists that were splashing solely for lightning bolts. Your decks are getting tighter now. especially with Fatal Push replacing Lightning Bolt in those builds. Mana bases aren't as greedy, and they can run him. However, some of the decks still don't want him, so they want their Thought Jesus instead.
I actually did play against Rich Shea online. He was running a list. It seemed more like Shardless than anything else, but it wasn't running any Shardless Agents or Ancestrals. It was running Leovolds and True Names, but it had the Liliana of the Veils, it had the Jaces. You know, it did not have the Nobles. I thought it was good. It was like by the skin of my teeth, managed to win that.
I think the Noble is such a really great addition to that deck, because not only are you going to be consistently playing a 3-drop on 2, but you also get to accelerate out your Jace a turn faster if they happen to answer your 3-drop. And that can really, really turn the game around completely.
Yeah, the amount of play Noble sees is going to basically be as long as playing the early True Name is what makes the difference. If the meta somehow migrates away from this, then I could see the remainders going to a more black-heavy grind deck. But as long as they're playing the mirror and having to beat other True Names, then you're right. I do think you're going to see Noble stick around more.
I remember when the recent set was spoiled, my mind, when I saw Walking Ballista, my thought immediately went to Trinket Mage becoming a replacement for Fierce Empath for your like win condition tutor ability in that list, because it can also hit cards like EE. I know, Peter, you've played a bit of Food Chain in your day, and I know we saw a Food Chain list beat one of the 4 undefeateds at Louisville. What do you think this uptick in bug leaves Food Chain in the meta right now? I know personally, I think it's garbage because you play it and I always crush you. But in the meta game as a whole, with competent players behind it, what are your thoughts on Food Chain right now?
So I think Food Chain is in one of those like weird spots. Like against a lot of these bug decks, it can just grind harder. Like Griffin plus Deathrite equals permanent blockers. And when you look at Food Chain, one of its biggest strengths is that it's a synergy deck over a combo deck. Whenever I played it, I would board out the combo being Emrakul, Fierce Empath, and then just board in more creatures and then just rely on Food Chain to have vigilant Griffins. That being said, I feel like with all of these other bug decks, you know, being leaner, being, you know, just a little cleaner, a little less clunky than casting Manipulate Fate to exile some Griffins, that even if there's all this synergy, I feel like because it's not an instant speed win like Alurin is, when you're going off and you're casting these Mistholo Griffins, an Abrupt Decay really just can shut the whole deck down.
In terms of decks you're going to see on Magic Online, probably not too much Food Chain.
Well, to add to that, Food Chain is thankfully a lovely Markidian Mask card and is $30-some-odd each, last time I checked. And plus, if you want to protect that Food Chain once, get a Misdirection. Last I checked, that was around $100. So, yay!
Yes, hooray for Magic Online's interesting prices. So it's less common to see. I mean, I know I've looked around at the past few GPs and seen it. I haven't seen it online.
We'll be right back with our Super Secret Tech of the Week.
Welcome back. Every single week, it is our solemn duty to share with you our Super Secret Tech of the Week, in which we take a close look at a piece of technology from Magic. These are tournament tips, special cards, or even an entire deck. And this week, it's going to be an entire deck. Adam, in keeping with our bug theme, is going to go over the super duper spicy bug vile deck that's been making the rounds on MTGO recently. So without further ado, Adam, take it away.
All right, so probably a few weeks ago, I was talking to Topher. He had jammed a league online and had lost pretty handily to roughly this list. It's by a gentleman named Kaluma online. It's very much designed to have a very good Miracles matchup while still not losing too many percentage points otherwise. So start with 20 lands, notably 4 Wastelands, Bug Mana Base, single Caracas,
particular doesn't help the mana at all.
I think it's actually a secret boon because he's playing five legendary creatures. But
oh yeah, it's very good protection there.
Yeah, with Vial.
Seems spicy. So for the creatures, there's your typical bug creature package, 4 Baleful Strix, 4 Deathrite Shaman, 4 Goyf, 3 True Name Nemesis. And then we get into the spice. There are 2 Leovolds, a Harbinger of the Tides, which is a merfolk wizard, costs 2. When it enters the battlefield, you may return target tapped creature an opponent controls to its owner's hand. So it's a hedge against black, red reanimator, that sort of thing. Lands that has one big old creature and is about to win with it.
Say goodbye to your Merit Lodges and Gristlebrands, folks.
Yeah, gets right there. That it comes off Vial and is uncounterable, gets around your Wastelands and your counter magic for it. It's also running a personal favorite of mine, 3 Aegric Spymaster of Trest. The instants and sorceries the deck runs, 4 Decays, Brainstorms, Force of Will, which can help, you know, get rid of the extra legendaries. All your legendary creatures, the 3 Aegric and 2 Leovolds, are blue and pitchable. And last but not least, 4 Aether Vials to get around counter magic. Get down early and let you still cast your Abrupt Decays while still putting pressure on the board or playing 2 threats to get the best out of your Aedrics.
So basically, this deck has taken a page from the most recent bug decks we were talking about in the main segment, except instead of Noble Hierarch, it has opted for 4 Aether Vials as the other turn 1 play of choice, and is deciding to take advantage of the unblockability and difficult to block nature of Baleful Strix to synergize with Aedric as well as your card draw engine, instead of, you know, trying to see more cards with the extra Sylvan Library or Ponders or Brainstorm, even since this deck's only running 3 Brainstorm. It's going for raw cards with Aedric instead of card quality with Ponders and Sylvans in the previous bug deck, correct?
Yeah, that is one of the things that you'll notice with a lot of these bug lists, is because bug lists are now generally good stuff deck lists where each card is individually very powerful. Something like Ponder is not as good as just drawing cards, because each card you draw is going to be more individually powerful. You don't really need Ponder as much to get the best card for any given situation. This deck just wants to draw cards, and draw cards it does.
We just want raw power.
Right after Topher mentioned how bad the match was with him, I played it with Storm, and he was able to play an early Vial, and I had a slow hand, so he was able to still cast the post-board Thought Seizes and the Fluster Storms while using Vial to apply pressure on me. The last time I played with Storm, I lost 2-1 because he was able to Vial out some creatures, and my cantrips were turned off thanks to Leovold.
Do you think that it's just Revenge of the Elves? I mean, he's playing a deck with 9 elves in it, and they're maybe a little holding a grudge against you for deciding to abandon their brothers and sisters.
It certainly,
yeah, probably. These bug lists are a little weaker to elves because True Name Nemesis doesn't line up as well against Trample as does most other creatures in the format. You're still able to go over the top with a combo win, which is something I like. I know I've liked it in the metagame currently, is as long as you can avoid miracles. And I know Peter and Brooks, you two do like the robust 3-color mana bases.
Exactly. And this Aether Vial deck that you're talking about from Kaluma, it kind of scares me as a lands player as well, because he's running one of each basic. He's running mainboard Caracas. He's running Harbinger of the Tides, which last time I checked is not very good for my Merit Lodge tokens.
But
he's
Brooks,
got 4 Deathrite Shamans, which is great against us.
Like, Brooks!
What?
You get the best card against them. You can just Tabernacle them once you get rid of all their lands. Go ahead, Aether Vial.
Yeah, because that always happens against, you know, Death and Taxes and all these other Aether Vial decks.
Well, if you notice, this Aether Vial deck is running 4 Wastelands.
I have actually successfully ghost quartered out Death and Taxes down in GP Rhode Island. It was a side event. I successfully ghost quartered out all of Death and Taxes planes.
Flawless victory achieved.
Well, no, he had an Aether Vial.
Oh.
He couldn't do much, but he had one.
We'll be right back with our audience trivia question and the winner of last week's trivia question. Stay tuned.
Lastly, we'd like to wrap up with an audience trivia question. Our question last week was, name a card that was not printed in a Magic the Gathering set. As it turns out, there are a lot of these cards, from holiday promos like Thopter Pie Network or Mishra's Toy Workshop, to book promos like Sewers of Estar or Nalathni Dragon, or even Richard Garfield's personal announcement cards like Splendid Genesis and Fraternal Exaltation. All of these are correct answers. Our winner this week is Bob H., who submitted Shichi Fukujin Dragon, which is one of two truly unique Magic cards in existence, as in one of a kind. This card was created to celebrate the opening of the DCI Tournament Center in 1996. The name Shichi Fukujin is one of the seven deities of good fortune in Japanese mythology. This symbolism was meant to extend to the eventual good fortune of the DCI Tournament Center. So, congratulations, Bob H. We will be emailing you shortly to get your address so we can claim your draft set. Now, on to this week's trivia question. How would a silver-bordered foil copy of City of Traders come into existence? If you email us the correct answer, I will personally mail you a draft set of Kaladesh and Aether Revolt. If you know the answer, shoot us a line at sstmtgcast@gmail.com. That's sstmtgcast@gmail.com. Of all the answers submitted, I will randomly select a winner in a week's time. You can find the show on Twitter at SuperSecretMTG. You can also find me personally on Twitter at OneWithNothing, and Adam is at BirchLoreRanger. Any questions or the trivia answer for today's cast can be emailed to the same email address I mentioned before, which is sstmtgcast@gmail.com. On behalf of myself, Adam, Topher, and Peter, thank you for listening. We will catch you next week.